MacCast, Sunday, September 2nd, 2018. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Another week has gone by, another bunch of things going on in the world and Apple and Macintosh, and we're here to talk to you about all of it. Yeah, actually, it's a little bit light, I have to admit, in terms of the news. We have a lot of stuff, though, coming up because we now know when Apple's next keynote is going to be. So we're going to be talking about that. Invites went out. What did they look like? What's happening there? All signs are pointing to iPhone sales maybe getting a little bit better this time around. There was an update to a product that we thought Apple was kind of done with. We'll talk about that a little bit. Something exciting going on there. Apple acquiring a company related to AR and VR. We'll get into that. And also a repair program that you might want to know about, especially if you're a recent owner of a new iPhone. We'll get into that, and then we'll get to a little bit of feedback. We've got some follow-up on some of the two-factor authentication stuff we talked about in the last episode of the MacCast. I want to go back and revisit our conversations in and around Apple Watch in the community, basically based off some stuff that has changed in my life, or some new uses that I'm finding or increasing with my Apple Watch. I want to get into that and find out what you're doing with yours. And also, I've got a really cool thing of the moment, something really fun, game for you this week, and that will round out this this week's episode. So without further ado, let's get into what's happening with Apple and their next big event. Yeah, Apple has basically confirmed what we already thought and talked about in the last episode of the MacCast, the rumors that September 12th would be the date for basically the next iPhone announcements. And that is now confirmed. It will be September 12th at the Steve Jobs Theater on Apple Park, or at Apple Park. I guess it's kind of more adjacent to Apple Park. I need to get out a map and look at exactly how that works out. But Apple did send out invites this past week to reporters and tech pundits out to the media, and the invitation said gather round, and it had a goldish or almost rose goldish version of the Apple Park spaceship. I guess you'd call it the logo. Apple has a bunch of t-shirts. Basically, it's a vector stylized version of the Apple Park campus looking straight down on it, so you kind of get the lines of where the solar panels and things like that are on the top of the spaceship. And what was interesting about it is it did have this kind of gold tinge to it. So, of course, we can try and read the tea leaves and look into that stuff. We'll talk a little bit about where some of those hints, I think, are coming into play. But Apple will stream the event. It's going to begin at about 10 a.m., or right at 10 a.m., rather, Pacific time, on September the 12th, 2018. Of course, we will be reporting on all the things that Apple announces after the event here on the MacCast, and we'll be digging in and getting into a lot of the details. Of course, right now what we have is a lot of speculation, and I thought it'd be a good time to just kind of consolidate everything, talk about what we're expecting Apple to announce. We've talked about a lot of it in the build-up, of course, to the event, but right now we are expecting that the main event will be the announcement of three new models of the iPhone. This week we're hearing that they might actually be dubbed, at least the first two models, the ones that are going to be updates for the iPhone X and the added new iPhone X Plus, they're actually going to be the XS models. 9to5Mac is claiming that they have pretty much confirmation of that. I don't know how I feel about that. 10S, do you guys like that? We're going back to the S series year. It does make sense in terms of what we're expecting on the models. It's sort of an iterative version of the iPhone X. We get that new larger size, so it makes sense from that perspective. But I kind of just felt like Apple would be better off just going with iPhone across the board and just simplifying the whole thing. The other thing that 9to5 is claiming is that they are going to have a new gold color, or gold will be an option. That was something that was expected to happen, but just never did. We had the space gray and, of course, the silver. This is being brought about by a leaked image that 9to5 Mac came across that shows a gold version of the iPhone X and X Plus, or what we're now calling the XS and XS Plus. And that sort of feeds into the invite, I guess, because you've got that gold color on the invite. So it seems to be indicating we are going to get a gold version. 9to5 Mac didn't say where they got the images from. One theory is that it was a marketing video stream that Apple was testing, and they thought no one was paying attention to, and somebody found it and leaked the images to 9to5 Mac. I was looking at the images and almost wondering if they were internal marketing images for Apple's website that were somehow leaked by a designer, or maybe they were being put together out of house and being transmitted back and forth and somebody leaked them out. That's what they look like to me. They look like product marketing shots, basically Apple gearing up and getting ready for the event. But we are expecting those two new iPhone models. We're also expecting the 6.1-inch LCD lower-cost version of the iPhone. All of the models are expected to take their design cues from the iPhone X, so that means they're all going to have a notch. They're all going to not have a home button. They all will have the True Depth camera system and Face ID technology. It's expected we will get updated processors in those. And of course, we have that rumor that the larger model might have more storage, up to 512 gigabytes. And pricing is expected to start just under $700, I think, for that low-cost LCD model, around $800, $900 for the iPhone X, and then about $999, just under $1,000 starting price for that iPhone XS Plus model. So that's what is expected or rumored to be happening. Of course, we will find out on the 12th exactly what Apple is bringing us in terms of new iPhone models. It's also expected that Apple will announce new models of the iPad, or updated versions of the iPad Pros, the 10.5-inch and the 12.9-inch models. They are expected to reduce the bezels all the way around, which means we could get smaller form factors with the same screen sizes. Also, again, taking design cues from the iPhone X design, no home button, True Depth camera systems, Face ID, and the notch is somewhat expected, although there have been some rumors that they might be able to, because of the larger size of the device, integrate that right into even those thinner bezels. So we're going to have to see what Apple, what direction Apple goes in those. Of course, new processors, updated specs, all that sort of stuff. But again, it's going to be more of an iterative upgrade for the iPads. Well, I guess more significant because of the design changes, but not expecting a lot of new features beyond just bringing it in line with the iPhone X designs. We're also expected to get an update to the Apple Watch, and this may be the most significant update to the Apple Watch in terms of design that we've received so far. 9to5 Mac also claimed to have leaked images, or posted leaked images, of the new watch designs, and what they show is smaller bezels, allowing Apple to enlarge the displays by about 15%, but keep the same sizes, so still a 38mm and 42mm size in that square format that's so familiar with the Apple Watch, although it's looking like this year's design is going to have a thinner profile, something that a lot of people have been asking for. So not quite as thick, and they are expected to still have a little bit longer battery life. So I don't know what kind of magic Apple is going to squeeze in there, but if they can pull that off, thinner profile, thinner design, and longer battery life, I think that's a win-win all the way around. We also have that rumor that there might be two fewer models, many expecting the edition ceramic versions to go away. I gave you my personal theory on the last episode of the MacCast that I think it could also possibly be that Apple does away with the non-cellular versions, making cellular an option across the entire line. You just don't have to choose to activate it, and I think they would still maintain the lower price point, so they wouldn't charge you the current price point of the cellular versions. You just pay the Wi-Fi price with the new editions, but they would all have the ability to be activated on a cellular plan. And I think the advantage to that is that the carriers can push the service for more Apple Watch owners, and more Apple Watch owners would naturally just have the option. So that could be a way that they go. Another thing on the design, looking at the images, the crown, the digital crown, and the side buttons seem to be tweaked a little bit. They look like they don't, to me, protrude as much from the side of the device, and that may confirm some of the rumors that Apple may be going with solid-state buttons, going with touch-sensitive buttons on the sides rather than physical buttons. And that would allow that digital crown, which will still rotate, so it'll still spin. It's just the push part of it where you push in to activate Siri and stuff like that. You actually wouldn't push. You just kind of press and hold, and there'd be some haptic feedback and all that sort of stuff, much like the virtualized button on the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus, right? So going that direction. And that could be confirmed by this little design change. There's also a little extra hole between the digital crown and the mic on, or the digital crown and the side button, and that's expected to be a mic. Some reports I saw alluded that it could be a speaker, but I think it's a little bit too small to be a speaker. So I think it's an extra microphone, probably for better Siri detection and stuff like that on the watch. Another cool little design change is they did away with a little red dot on the crown, and there's just simply a nice, elegant little red ring around that. And I think it looks a lot better. It doesn't stand out quite as much. And that'll be a nice welcome design change if, again, this leaked image from 9to5Mac does turn out to be accurate. And looking at it, I mean, it looks very plausible. But again, until Apple actually shows us what they're doing, we have to take everything with a little grain of salt. The leak image also does show a new complication-dense watch face. So for those of you who like a lot of complications on your watch, I'm in that camp because I use the modular face right now for that reason. They have an analog version that has 8 complications featured on a single face. So they have kind of four round complications, almost looking like the little application icons in the center of the face, and then all around the curved part of the analog watch, you know, where the seconds and minutes and stuff would be displayed, there are curved versions of other complications. So you get 4 around the edges and 4 in the center for a total of 8. And so that looks like it might be a cool new watch face that Apple could announce at this event. And Apple is doing very well with Apple Watch. Just by the way, a lot of people are probably wondering, you know, does it make sense for Apple to be updating the Apple Watch so frequently? Are they really going to be able to continue to drive sales with putting out a new version? Well, latest numbers from Counterpoint Research show that Apple has a 41% share currently of the global smartwatch market. Now, that is actually down slightly from their study last year, where they said Apple had about 48% of the market. But what's interesting in this latest report is that the Series 1 was the top model sold for this year, with the Series 3 coming in the fourth spot. They've got Fitbit and a couple other companies in the second and third slots. But they did say that last quarter, the Series 1 contributed to about 9 out of 10 Apple Watches sold. So a lot of people buying the older version, the Series 1 version. I have a feeling that means, though, there's a lot of customers that might have older versions of the Apple Watch. And I actually heard from some of you in the MacCast community that, hey, yeah, I have a Series 0 still. And so I'm looking forward to the Series 4. I think this is the time when I would upgrade. And that feels like the right time frame to me for Apple Watch. You know, 3 years, maybe 4 years on, is when you're going to want to be looking at a upgrade, because a lot of the features will have major changes for you, and it will be a significant update, performance and stuff like that. Plus, Apple has started with the Series 0 to, you know, the new version of the Watch OS is not going to support the Series 0. So it will, I think we're going to get a lot of people upgrading to this Series 4 version. I have a Series 2. I don't think I'm quite ready to update yet. I'm perfectly happy with mine. It's running very well. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the podcast, because I am really still enjoying my Apple Watch. So I want to get into that a little bit. So those are kind of the major announcements. We could get a little Apple TV thing, but it's not looking like it at this point. You know, Apple has the fourth generation of the Apple TV, the 4K version, and I think that's still selling very well. Not a lot of changes to potentially happen there. The other thing that we've been talking about is updated MacBooks or MacBook Airs, or maybe, as I, you know, feel and talked about on the last episode of the MacCast, I think Apple is going to merge that line and come out with a new version of the lower cost, ultra lightweight, portable MacBook. I think that the 12-inch MacBook is going to take on some of the properties of the MacBook Air, and they'll combine that into a single line. But there's still some theories saying Apple's going to do two updated versions, an updated MacBook, an updated MacBook Air. And actually, Intel this past week announced new processors that look like they might be the perfect fit to go into either or both of those new machines or those new updates. They updated their U-series and Y-series processors. The U-series is the Whiskey Lake. The Y-series is the Amber Lake. And as a matter of fact, the Y-series processors, those are the ones that are in the current MacBook lineup. So this would be the eighth generation of those. It would naturally fall that that's probably what Apple will update to if they do update the MacBook series. The U-series may actually find their way into an updated version of the MacBook Air. And Intel did say when they announced these chips that they would be showing up in new computers, new notebooks, and tablets coming out this fall. So the timing does seem right. The question becomes, is Apple going to announce new MacBooks at this upcoming event on the 12th? And typically that event is focused solely on iPhones and iPads, maybe the Apple TV, Apple Watch, that sort of thing. And that's a lot to cram into a single event. Typically, they will have a fall Mac event or announcements, but those tend to happen in October. So I think we're going to get a separate event for the Mac. So I think those updates still will be coming. I guess Apple could still surprise us. We also have the possible Mac Mini update that was rumored and we talked about on the last episode of the MacCast. So that could be something they could announce, although the theory there is that Apple is targeting a kind of pro version of the Mac Mini, that they're actually going to update it and then have this kind of higher end, higher price point model brought back that they did in the past, right? Remember, they had the Mac Mini server that sold for about $1,000. This would not be a server model, but more focused at the pro market who uses Mac Minis. But I'm expecting Apple to put the Mac Mini announcement and the MacBook update into a single event, probably sometime in October. So expect that to be a separate event, but that's just my personal theory. I don't know. What do you think? Of course, we don't have much longer to wait. The 12th is right around the corner, just about 10 days away as I record this podcast. So we will find out soon. And I'm pretty excited about this year's event, although I don't think the one thing I wanted to talk to you about is I'm not sure that there's anything going to be in this event that I'm going to want to necessarily upgrade to. And this is the first event in a long time when I feel like that. I have an iPhone 10, and if it does turn out to be the update is the iPhone 10S with just some minor tweaks, a new color, an updated processor, maybe a little bit better cameras. I guess it depends for me a lot on what they do with the camera hardware. If there's a significant hardware update there and we haven't been hearing about that in the rumors, then I might be tempted to go for an update to an iPhone XS. But I'm super happy with my iPhone X, and I can't imagine there's anything in there that's going to get that me really excited about upgrading, especially considering the fact that I paid a lot of money for my iPhone X, over $1,000, and I don't know that I want to be spending just a year later another $1,000 on a slightly tweaked or slightly updated iPhone. iPads, they're really cool. My iPad Pro is several generations old at this point, but it's still going strong and I absolutely love it. And I don't see any reason to upgrade. Like I said, I'm happy with my Series 2 Apple Watch. So I'm kind of feeling like I just don't want to spend the money this year. And that's a weird feeling for me. I've never really felt like that. Of course, this all could change when Apple makes the announcements. I could get the halo effect or reality distortion field effect from the announcements. I said the wrong thing, and I could totally change my mind. And stay tuned for that on a future episode of the MacCast. But right now, I'm kind of feeling I'm excited about the announcements for the people who are going to be upgrading. But for me, I think it's probably not going to be the year for upgrades. The other thing that could convince me to buy a new iPhone is my kids. We do hand-me-downs in my family, and they are looking forward to getting their updated phone. So I may have to upgrade just for that reason. We'll have to see. But, you know, what do you think? Are you excited about this stuff? Are you going to upgrade? Where are you at in the cycle? Shoot us some feedback. Send me an email or an audio comment. MacCast@gmail.com. Now, while I might not be in that sort of group for upgrading my iPhone this year, there are a lot of signs pointing to a potential increase in iPhone sales, and that's something that hasn't happened for a while. You know, iPhone sales year over year have been declining or relatively flat, but there have been a few indicators that this year's batch of iPhones might finally be a chance for Apple to have a little boost or a little jump in iPhone sales. Part of this is coming from a Loop Ventures survey. They asked 530 iPhone customers if they plan on upgrading, and almost half of them, 48%, said they are looking to upgrade their devices this year. Now, digging in on the numbers a little bit, they said they do plan to upgrade, but maybe not all of them to the latest technology. About 42% said they did plan to buy a new 2018 model iPhone. Another 18%, though, said that they'd probably get the current iPhone X. And in a survey done around the same time last year, only about 23% of the people said they planned to upgrade. So overall, you know, that's almost double the number of people saying they're planning to upgrade this year, which is good news for Apple. A lot of people getting excited. And I thought about, you know, why is this? Because the iPhone X was a major redesign of the iPhone, and you would have thought that would have gotten a lot of people jazzed about upgrading. But I think what happened was the higher price point, I think, held some people back. And I think also because it was a radical design change, a lot of people took a wait and see attitude to think, you know, is this really going to work? How's Face ID going to function? Are people going to like it? And so I think some people held off. And I think now that it's a kind of some proven technologies, they see what's going on, they see the future direction for the iPhone, I think there's a lot of people out there ready to upgrade. And I think we're just falling in that cycle again with iPhone updates where 2 to 3 years feels like it's going to be the right upgrade cycle. The other thing that came out of the survey was that about 19% of the folks surveyed said they would be switching over from Android, which is still a pretty nice boost, although I think last year about 24% had said they were going to be switching. So Apple's still maintaining a lot of Android switchers. I think there's going to be even more people coming over because of the larger iPhone XS Plus, the 6.5-inch model, and I think that's going to get a lot of people jazzed. I think there's a lot of people that did hold off on the iPhone X because they wanted the larger version, and now they're going to get it this go around, or it's seeming like they're going to get this go around. So I think that's also going to juice sales. So a lot of analysts and people speculating that the iPhone this year is going to do quite well in terms of numbers, and we'll have to see what Apple announces, but I think there's going to be some pretty good buzz going. Now, here's a thing, you know, Apple released an Airport Express update this week. Yeah, the discontinued Airport Express model, the thing that Apple is no longer selling, got a software update. And that would be big news in and of itself, because it would just be, wow, Apple is updating discontinued, you know, software on discontinued products. But even more surprising was the fact that they added AirPlay 2 support to the tiny router. The firmware version is 7.8. It was released this week, and it supports the 2012 802.11n Airport Express models. For those of you keeping score, that is the second generation version of the Airport Express 802.11n. It's the one that looks like a little mini Airport Extreme. It's the square one. Almost actually looks like a white version of an Apple TV. So if you have that model, you can grab the new firmware version, and that will add AirPlay 2 support. So you can plug in a set of external speakers, and you can add those to the HomePod app. It will be recognized as a destination for multi-room audio. You can send audio to it using Siri controls, and you can integrate it in with your other AirPlay 2 devices. So if you have Sonos speakers that are on AirPlay 2 or a speaker system that's running AirPlay 2, you can integrate right in and send the audio everywhere. Now, I got a little bit excited when this update was announced, because on Apple's support site for the firmware version, it just says it supports the 802.11n Airport Express. And there's actually two models, the square version, which was the first generation, and this little Apple TV looking version, and they didn't make the distinction. So I immediately tried to download the software, install it on my AirPort, and it was a no-go. There was no AirPlay 2 support for me. So this is only the second generation version, but if you happen to have one of those, give it a shot. I'm hearing from a couple people in the community, and they are really liking it. As a matter of fact, some of you have already sent me pictures of hooking it up and making your Apple Hi-Fi speakers into AirPlay 2 speakers, which is really cool. Combining a couple bits of old technology with some new software to create something modern and up to date. Unfortunately, I also heard from one of you in our community who was using Airport Expresses and also HomePod, and decided that when AirPlay 1 devices weren't playing at the same time with AirPlay 2 devices, the two weren't compatible together, decided you were going to get rid of your Airport Expresses. And that was just a week before the new update came out. So that was a little bit frustrating, and I can completely understand being a little bit of angry at Apple for not being a little more open about bringing AirPlay 2 support to the older Airport Express. They just kind of sprung it on us. This really was a surprise and caught a lot of people off guard. But I have a feeling there's a lot of people, myself included, that are going to be out there looking for used Airport Expresses now, because we can use them for AirPlay 2 and expand our AirPlay speaker systems in with multi-room audio and support. So that's pretty cool that Apple did that. If you'd like to grab that update, it is out and available now. You can just run the AirPort utility either on your iPad or on your Mac if you have, again, a second generation AirPort Express to grab that. Apple acquired a company out of Colorado this week, according to Reuters. The company is called Aconia Holographics, I think that's how you say it, and they began in 2012, and they were originally focused on holographic storage, but that's not why Apple picked them up, because the company pivoted, and they now do augmented reality lens technology. They claim to have a technology that creates an image that is ultra clear and offers full color performance from their augmented reality lens, and they also say that it comes from the thinnest, lightest head-worn displays in the world. So they are focused on a lens technology that has a high field of view, and they say their technology can be integrated into the smallest form factors, like quote-unquote common glasses. And that's something that Apple would be very interested in. We know that Tim Cook has said many, many times that augmented reality is something that he believes is very interesting and something that Apple is exploring. And we have had rumors in the past that Apple is working on a set of augmented reality glasses, or an augmented reality glasses product. They've been rumored for a while, either augmented reality or virtual reality, but the rumors have gone so far as to say that Apple's already developed 8K displays, that they are building custom built-in processors and a custom operating system nicknamed ROS, or Reality Operating System, and that they're looking to release a commercial version of the product sometime in 2019, as early as 2019 or 2020. But again, one of the big challenges with augmented reality glasses is that you do have to have glasses, and you don't want big bulky things, and you want something that looks cool. And everybody is searching for the holy grail, which would be, hey, just things that look like regular glasses. And this company claims to have technology that would potentially enable that. And they have over 200 patents related to that technology. Now, none of the pricing or details was given in the Reuters piece, and Apple has not officially confirmed the purchase, although they did give their standard answer, which generally indicates that they bought a company. When they get questioned about it, they say Apple buys smaller companies from time to time, and we generally don't discuss our purpose or plan. And so that is generally about the closest thing to a confirmation you will get from Apple when you ask them, hey, did you buy this company? And that's basically Apple saying, yes, we did, but we're not going to talk about it. So it does look like they bought this company. Of course, they could be after a lot of their patents and things that they're doing for other applications. It might may or may not be actually a set of augmented reality glasses. As a matter of fact, Apple has been posting job postings recently looking for engineers with augmented reality experience to work on their Apple Maps team. So that could be technology related and maybe going into their car project. Who really knows? So, you know, any of these things could be a possibility, but definitely we are expecting future Apple products to focus a lot more on augmented reality, virtual reality, and it'll be interesting to see what Apple comes up with. Obviously, they seem to be hiring the right talent and the right kinds of people and acquiring the right kinds of companies to make that happen. A while back, they actually did buy another company back in 2017 called Totem, and that company was also developing a mixed reality or augmented reality headset. So they have been acquiring a few companies. This is the second company they would have acquired specifically in the augmented reality, virtual reality headset space, and that's, I think, what's giving rise to these new rumors that, yes, Apple is working on a set of glasses. Will it be a product that sees the light of day? I don't know. I kind of think so. If Apple can come up with something cool enough, I'd love to see that, especially, again, if they look like a standard set of glasses. But what do you think? You know, are you excited about the idea about having a set of glasses where you can get augmented reality information in real time in front of you? I think it would be great for things like directions. I'm terrible at remembering people's names, so I'd love to have an app in my glasses that would remind me what a person's name was. Maybe it could have facial recognition, detect who they are, and then search through my contacts, find a face match, and then present to me the name right there on my glasses. That would be super useful for me. There's just a lot of potentially really cool applications for this kind of technology, but the challenge, of course, is you need to get the display out of the way. You know, you can't be holding up your iPhone and looking through that as your lens. That works well for some applications, but for others, not so great. And there are places where having a, you know, heads-up display that's built into something like glasses could be very, very cool. But they can't be dorky. They can't put this layer of technology, I think, between you and the world. And that's where we're at with a lot of the current systems that are out there. So HoloLens, you know, or Magic Leap, all of these things, they look like you're focused on something else and not on the real world around you. And I think what Apple really wants to do is they want to take that barrier down. And until they can kind of do that, I don't think they're going to bring the technology out. So I think this timeline of Apple releasing something in 2019 or 2020 might be a little bit aggressive, but if they can pull it off, I think it could be amazing. But what do you think? Shoot me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. All right, last thing that I have for you in the news for this week. If you're the owner of an iPhone 8 and you've been having some issues with your iPhone, it may not be your fault. There may be an issue with your hardware. Apple announced that it is offering free repairs to a small percentage of iPhone 8 owners who have defective logic boards in their iPhone 8s. And this issue does seem to only affect iPhone 8 models, not the iPhone 8 Plus. Apple says some customers of iPhone 8s are experiencing issues that can cause restarts, freezing, and unresponsive devices. The issue seems to be related to a manufacturing defect, according to Apple. And if you are impacted, they are going to fix it for free. So this is a warranty repair extension program. They have details up on a website. I will have a link to that in the show notes at maccast.com. And there you can actually check to see if the serial number of your model is eligible for the repairs. Apple says the affected units were sold between September 2017 and March 2018. So if you fall in that range and you are experiencing issues, what you want to do is make an appointment at your local Apple retail store at the Genius Bar. You want to contact your Apple authorized service provider or go through Apple support to set up and schedule a repair of your device. Now, a couple things. You must have the device serviced in the region where you purchased it. So if you bought an iPhone in one country and you use it in another country, you're going to have to take it back to the country of origin, which is often a little bit inconvenient for people, but that's how Apple runs these programs. And also, you can't have any existing issues with your phone that would inhibit the ability for Apple to replace the logic board. So specifically something like if you already have a cracked display, they are going to make you fix your display before they go in and swap out your logic board. So just be aware of that. And the new program will cover iPhone 8 devices for up to 3 years after the first date of sale. And that's whether or not you purchased AppleCare Plus. So this is outside of that, and they will cover your iPhone 8. So sounding like it's a small percentage of people that are impacted, but if you are impacted, this could be a great program for you. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and recognize one of our show sponsors, and that is Molecule. Molecule is a complete reinvention of the air purifier, not just an improvement on existing outdated technology. Molecule introduces a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level. Their Pico technology goes beyond HEPA filtration to not just capture, but completely destroy the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than what a HEPA filter can trap. In a study of allergy sufferers presented at the American College of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, Molecule's technology provided dramatic, statistically significant, and sustained symptom reduction within a week of use. The results have transformed lifelong allergy and asthma sufferers' lives. In fact, one customer said that she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. We've been able to try out the Molecule in our house for about a week now, and I have to say I have been impressed with the results. I set it up in my office, and almost immediately the day I set it up, my wife and kids said the air in here just smelled better and felt fresher. I suffer from allergies, mostly like dust and pollen, those sorts of things. And this time of year especially, it can get pretty bad, and I've noticed a dramatic reduction in my symptoms in, again, just the few days that I've been using the Molecule in my house. Things like runny nose, itchy eyes, I'm not suffering from those, or itchy and watery eyes, I'm not suffering from those as much. So it is having an impact here. The other thing I'm really enjoying about the Molecule is the design and portability. It has a solid aluminum shell. It actually looks like something Apple might have designed. It has cool light that comes out the top of it, and it has this really neat leather handle that means we can actually move it easily from room to room, which has been very convenient because we can take it right where we need it. So wherever we're hanging out, we just bring it along, and it's really easy to set up and get going. You just plug it in. It's got a great touchscreen display and integration with an app that you download from the App Store for all the setup and configuration. That also helps you keep track of the filtration system. And it comes with a filter service, and it will automatically notify you and deliver you filters when you need them. So you can keep it up and running. It makes the maintenance really, really easy. And best of all, you can get $75 off your first order when you visit molecule.com and at checkout, enter MacCast. That's MOLEKULE.com. And at checkout, enter MacCast, MACCAST, and you're going to save $75 off your first order. So check it out, molecule.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. on the last episode of the MacCast, we talked a little bit about two-factor authentication. I actually had a listener write in, and she was concerned about using two-factor authentication in case she lost her authenticated device, the iPhone, that the code would normally get sent to. And I tried to waylay some of those fears and encourage you all to use two-factor authentication when and where you can. I have a little correction to make because I think on the last episode I alluded that the Apple Watch would be a trusted device. So we were talking about where those codes get sent because they get sent to all of your trusted devices, and a trusted device could be an iPhone, an iPad, a Mac, and I think I probably said an Apple Watch as well. Apple Watch is technically not a trusted device, at least not as far as the two-factor authentication is concerned. You would not get a push notification code on your Apple Watch. It comes to the phone. I can't remember if it actually gets displayed on the watch. I know if you get sent a text message, it'll show up with that. But with Apple's two-factor authentication, you don't get a text message. You actually get a special push notification that comes to your devices. So hopefully that didn't confuse too many people. And then one of the genesises for the whole conversation was this concern that I won't be able to use Find My iPhone if I don't have my phone or any of my trusted devices with me. So, you know, what happens if I'm traveling, I leave my iPhone on the plane, and I get off, I realize I don't have it, and I don't have an iPad, I don't have my Mac with me, I'm just going to, you know, someone else's computer or the computer in a lounge or at the hotel, you know, business center, and I need to use that. Now I need to log into iCloud, but when I try to log into iCloud, it asks me for my two-factor authentication code, and I can't get it. Well, Joe wrote in, and I gave some workarounds for that and explained ways that you could deal with that, but Joe wrote in to say, you know what? You don't even need that for Find My iPhone. You can actually use Find My iPhone without entering the code. And I thought, what? I didn't know that. I didn't know how to do that. And he actually sent me a screenshot. So what happens is when you go to iCloud.com on a computer and you try to log in and you have two-factor authentication turned on, yes, it will try to send you the code. It will say enter the code from your trusted device. But if you don't have access to that trusted device, down at the bottom of that screen where it's asking you for the code, where you would enter the code number, there's a couple little links. There's a link to access Find My iPhone, Apple Pay, or Apple Watch settings. If you click on any of those icons, it will let you log into just those sections of iCloud. You won't be able to get into any of the other sections of iCloud, but you can get into Find My iPhone. It'll ask you to confirm your password again, but once you just confirm your password without the two-factor authentication code, you can get access to Find My iPhone, so you can wipe a device, you can send the message to it, you can, you know, do the alert thing, you can see where it is. All of that stuff is available to you. So it looks like Apple has already kind of thought this through, and you don't need to worry about it. So you can access all of those. And I had no idea. So thanks, Joe, for writing in. I think that's going to waylay a lot of fears. And then one other little bit of feedback I got related to this, because along with this, we talked about using more secure passcodes on your devices, you know, instead of a four-digit passcode. We've talked about in the past brute force hacking and some of the tools that are out there now, things like Graykey that allow law enforcement or government agencies to crack into iPhones using just brute force passcode hacking. And if you have just a four-digit passcode, that machine can crack your device potentially in a matter of minutes. So it's more important these days to be using longer passcodes, more complex passcodes. I would recommend a pretty long alphanumeric passcode, something longer than probably about 12 characters, at least 11, 10, somewhere in that range. But a lot of people don't even just use a six-digit passcode. And Steven wrote in to say, well, that's great for iPhones and things like that, but what about Apple Watch? You know, there's a lot more data on Apple Watch these days and being sent to Apple Watch, and depending upon the applications you're using, that could be a point of security concern. And he asked, you know, I don't know if there's the brute force cracking tools for Apple Watch, like maybe going through the data port. And I don't think there are yet, but there could potentially be ones. And so the point is like, this is a good reminder. There's a lot of info on our wrists now. Maybe you want to change from using a simple four-digit passcode on your Apple Watch to something a little bit more complex, just to protect yourself a little bit more against those brute force hacking kinds of attempts. And I have to say that, Stephen, for me personally, I've had a longer, more complex 10-digit passcode on mine for a while, and it does make me feel a little bit safer. So, you know, something to think about if you have an Apple Watch and you're concerned about security. Maybe you want to lengthen that passcode a little bit longer, just like you probably have already done on your Apple Watch or on your iPhone or iPad. So some good advice and a great little bit of follow-up to our conversation about two-factor authentication. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about this week was just Apple Watch in general. And coming back to a conversation that we had, I think, a few months ago, although time flies. This could have been last year. I don't really know. But we had a conversation in the community about how we use our Apple Watches. And are you getting value out of your Apple Watch? And do you like your Apple Watch? And I'd like to revisit that conversation now. I thought this would be a good time, especially with some new watches coming out. I think the Series 3 has come out since then. So we now have a cellular version of the Apple Watch, which I think changes some of the use cases. So the questions back then were, how are you using your Apple Watch? What do you like about it? What do you not like about it? What do you wish would change? Just anything related to what you're using your Apple Watch for on a day-to-day basis. And I think I had commented back at the time that I don't use a lot of third-party apps. And for me, that's really still the case. I don't do a lot of extra things. I have a few key third-party apps, but it's not like my iPhone where I have a bazillion apps on it. I tend to stick to Apple's own applications. The one big change that's happened in my life recently is I'm trying to exercise more. I'm trying to get healthier. And I've had an Apple Watch for a long time. And I initially thought when I bought the Apple Watch, that would be a big feature that I would use and it would get me healthier. Didn't work out for me. I just didn't have the personal motivation to do it. Now I do, and I have to tell you, I am really enjoying the activity and workout features of my Apple Watch. And I'm not doing any kind of major workout. I am just trying to walk more. I'm walking about 5 miles a day, roughly 5 miles a day, and about 30 minutes in the morning and a 30-minute walk in the evening. And it's really making an impact. It's helping. I've lost about 30 pounds since May. And it's just through changing my diet, watching what I eat, and using the Apple Watch and exercising more. And using the Apple Watch is really motivating me to walk more. And what's doing it for me are two kind of key things. It is the sharing. So there's a couple people that I do exercise sharing with. So that is helping to motivate me quite a bit. I see what others are doing and I think, oh, well, they're out doing it. I can do it too. The other thing that is helping, believe it or not, and I always thought this was kind of a silly feature, is the badges. The little awards that you get for completing a 7-workout week or hitting your move goal or doubling your move goal, those things are really motivating to me. And I'm starting to push and try and see how long of a streak can I keep going on meeting my move goal and that sort of stuff. And I'm really starting to get into it. And I like having the workout tracking, being able to see where my heart rate is as I'm doing my workout, how fast I'm going. So I'm timing how long it takes me to walk a mile and I'm seeing that number go down. And that's really, really exciting. And it's gotten to the point where I've even updated the complications on my main watch face. My main watch face is modular, and now I have the activity and the workout complications on there just to make it easier for me to activate when I go start my workout in the morning. So I can tap right there on the workout icon, and when I get out to the street, I hit go on a walking workout and away I'm going. The one feature I'm really looking forward to, I have to tell you though, in iOS 12 is the start and stop detection for your workouts, because I can tell you I constantly am forgetting to stop my workout. So I get home and I forget to hit stop on it, and I'll look down later in the day and I will have been doing a 2-hour workout. Now, luckily, the rings on the iPhone or on the Apple Watch are smart enough to know, hey, you weren't really working out. Your heart rate wasn't up, even though you're showing a 3-hour workout. You only did 30 minutes where you were actually elevated heart rate and working out. So you really only get the credit on the ring for what you've actually been doing. And so that's pretty smart. But it does show a timed workout that's much longer than I actually did work out. But that's okay. And that's going to get fixed in iOS 12. So I'm looking forward to that little change. But just some other things, you know, about the Apple Watch that I'm using more and I'm really enjoying, you know, during my walk out, I can respond to text messages. Sometimes I use Siri to actually on the Apple Watch to skip forward or back in a podcast that I'm listening to, because I do listen to podcasts as I'm out walking. And somehow to me, the raise my wrist and talk to Siri seems a little bit easier than double tapping my AirPod and doing it through my AirPod. I do both on occasion, but I'm finding I'm actually using the Apple Watch a little bit more, and just not having to take my phone out of my pocket or anything like that is great. And when I do need to respond to messages with the Apple Watch, voice dictation works really, really well for me. But I still am always impressed by the scribble feature. And I think a lot of people forget about it or underestimate how good it is. If you haven't played around with and used the scribble feature for actually writing out a message or writing out an email response or adding something to reminders or whatever it might be on your Apple Watch, give it a shot. I think you'll be really impressed with how it works. And so those are kinds of the things that I'm doing with my Apple Watch. A few other useful apps for me, Fantastical, which is what I use for my calendar, both on my Mac and my iOS device. I love the Fantastical complication. It gives me a nice little summary, and just the app on the Apple Watch works really, really well. Carrot for weather. I love the Carrot weather complication and just the humor that Carrot brings, you know, to be able to tap and hold and get that little Carrot snark from the Carrot app right there on my Apple Watch. Out the Apple Watch speaker is a lot of fun. I use my Apple Watch a lot for timers, for Starbucks, for, you know, paying for my coffee at Starbucks, and of course Apple Pay. I'm a huge Apple Pay fan, and I think it works best on the Apple Watch, better than using my phone, to be able to just, you know, double tap on the side button, bring up my card, swipe through, pick the card that I want, and then use Apple Pay. Super, super convenient. And every place I can use that, I am using it. So those are the things that I'm using my Apple Watch for. That's what I'm liking about it a lot. As I said earlier, I don't think I'm going to be upgrading my Apple Watch. I would love to have the autonomy of having a cellular version, but I think I can go a little bit longer with my Series 2. It's working really, really well for me, and I absolutely love it. So I'm curious to hear from those of you out there who are considering upgrading your Apple Watch this year, why are you considering upgrading? What's going to kind of push you over the top? What version are you currently on? Are you, you know, upgrading every year, or are you skipping versions? You know, what's your kind of philosophy on that? Also, if you have a Series 3 Apple Watch and you've been using that for a while on cellular, has that changed significantly your Apple Watch usage? You know, are you using it more or using it different ways? If so, how not, you know, those sorts of things. So if you can shoot me some feedback, I'd really appreciate it. Maccast@gmail.com. And please, audio comments are very, very welcome. So if you can record, you know, a couple minutes just on your thoughts on Apple Watch, that'd be great. And we can share it on future episodes of the Maccast with the rest of the Maccast community. So I look forward to that. Maccast@gmail.com. Okay, the last thing that I have for you today is a thing of the moment. It is a new game that came out this past week. You may already be playing it. It's pretty popular. It's gotten some pretty good buzz, but I was excited to see it coming out because I liked the novelty of the game mechanic, how the game worked. And what I'm talking about is a game called Donut County. It costs $4.99 on the App Store. No in-app purchase, no ads. It's just $4.99, buy the game. And it is a story-driven puzzle game with what I consider to be a perfect game mechanic for a mobile device, for an iPhone or an iPad. I think the experience is a little bit better on the iPad because it's got a great art style. And the game mechanic, what you do is you play as a whole. Yeah, I know, an exciting main character, right? But it actually works out. They have really great characters in the game that are sort of driving the story part of it. And then you're playing this whole and you're dragging the hole around on in an environment, and what you're trying to do is swallow up objects into the hole. So you're getting objects to fall into the hole, and you start out with kind of small objects, you know, like donuts or plants or little pots or rocks or stones or something like that. And then as you swallow up things, your hole gets progressively bigger and bigger, larger and larger, and you can swallow up larger objects. And so you're trying to kind of clear the board of all of the objects each level. And then they start to throw in other elements, puzzle elements, to kind of increase the difficulty. So as you swallow up certain things, those things can influence the powers, so to speak, of your hole. And so you gain kind of new abilities, there's new things you can do, new game mechanics that you can trigger based on kind of what you're swallowing up. And you have to use some of that stuff to solve puzzles or to kind of clear the level. So there'll be little obstacles or challenges that you have to get past, and those things play into the game mechanic and make it really, really fun and interesting. This game is made by a single developer. His name is Ben Esposito, and it's published by a publishing company called Annapurna Interactive. Hopefully I pronounced that right. And they, Annapurna Interactive, they published a couple other cool games that I really enjoyed, and I think I recommended in the past, Goragoa and Florence. So if you played either of those games, you kind of get an idea for the types of games that Annapurna Interactive will publish. And so you know this is a good, high-quality game. Like I said, I really like the art style of this game. It's kind of this cool, cartoonish, low poly count style. They've got a lot of really great creative characters. And they also throw in a bunch of other fun game elements. So you got the story going on, you got the gameplay elements going on, and then as you are swallowing up things, they call it trash in the game, you're building up this Trashopedia, which is like this encyclopedia of all the things that you swallowed up. So you can go flip through, and it shows you the items that you've interacted with, and then gives you some really funny flavor text on each item that's in the quirky story style of the game. I will say the story is a bit quirky. I found it dragging and a little bit funky to follow at different times, but it's still a lot of fun. They're trying to have fun with it. And probably about the only complaint I have about the game, and it's a pretty minor one, is that the play time is relatively short. You're going to probably get through the game in a few hours. I finished it in about 2 hours, maybe a little bit longer. I did take a break in the middle. And so at $4.99, some people might go, I don't know if that's a really good value, a couple hours of playtime for $5. But here's the thing. I think it's a very fair value when you think about entertainment in general. $4.99 is about what you're going to pay to rent a movie on iTunes, and I do that all the time, and that's an hour and a half to 2 hours of entertainment, right? So you're talking about the same thing here, and this is a game. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on, so there's story stuff going on. You're interacting with it. I think it's almost more enjoyment. So I think it's a really great value. I think it's a really fun game. So if you're into kind of puzzle games and funky game mechanics that work really well on mobile and just that art style, go take a look at it. Donut County, it's available on the App Store right now. It's $4.99 US, and I think it's great. I had a lot of fun playing it, and I'm looking forward to expansions and maybe further, you know, explorations of it. If they come out with a new version, I think I would be all over it. So that is my thing of the moment for this week. And with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, PDF Pen for iOS, and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information, details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, you'd like to tell me about your Apple Watch, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IAM-9. If you need show notes with links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you'll find me online on Twitter at twitter.com/maccast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/themaccast, or check out the MacCast Google Plus community. That's at google.com/plusmaccast. But that'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.